the Legal Digest podcast with your host Natalie. Today I'm joined by Trish McKellen from Lawcare. Trish is the Director for Research and Engagement and practiced as a family lawyer for many years before moving to Lawcare. Today we're going to talk about wellbeing in the law and why so many junior lawyers are thinking of leaving the legal profession.
Hi Natalie, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, great to have you. Before we start, I thought it would be good to tell the listeners a bit about Lawcare. So could you tell us how Lawcare supports the legal community?
Of course. So Lawcare had its 25th anniversary last year, so we've been going for quite some time. And we're the mental wellbeing charity for the legal community. And we offer free emotional support to those working in the law in the UK, the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man. So basically, we can support with anything that's impacting on someone's professional or personal life. And we all know that a significant issue in one aspect of our life can very quickly affect the other. It's not always possible to leave a work concern in the office when we close the office door, especially so when many of us are working virtually. And vice versa, if you've suffered a bereavement or a relationship breakdown, a significant health concern, it obviously has the potential to affect you in the workplace. So people can access support through our direct support channels, that's our helpline, our live chat service, or our email channel, and can subsequently gain access to additional support via a peer support scheme that we run. And we can also facilitate counselling where it's appropriate. So it's a confidential and safe space to talk with a very low threshold. People don't need to be at or anywhere near crisis point. And they can remain anonymous if they wish. We don't ask for things like roll numbers or any identifying information. But we also recognise that, especially in this sector, many like to explore self-help options, certainly initially. So our website's packed with lots of resources in various formats, which hopefully appeal to different preferences. So we'll have things like resource sheets, blogs, podcasts, and the like. And importantly, our strategy also includes a swathe of much more proactive work to promote mental health and well-being best practice in legal workplaces. And you may have seen our Life in the Law research study, which was published in 2021. And that helped to inform our strategy. And we basically undertook it because we wanted to have a much clearer, better understanding of the issues of practice, in addition to what we hear via our engagement on a day-to-day basis with the profession. We also offer training and presentations to workplaces. And another increasingly important cog in our wheel is that we engage with wider stakeholders in the sector and encourage a more collaborative approach to recognise the challenges of the environment in law and work together to make the profession the best it can be for those working in it and the clients that they serve. So hopefully that's just a bit of a snapshot of what Lawcare is and does.
Yeah, and I think it's really great that lawyers have somewhere to go when they feel they need help and that wellbeing and mental health is kind of becoming a priority in the industry, because as long as I've been, which hasn't been that long, working in the law, every person that I meet, all of my colleagues, they've experienced some kind of mental health problem, and having law, charities like yourself, Lawcare, it's just that kind of added comfort that I have a helpline, I can talk to someone confidentially if I have a problem.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to start with the IBA's report. So the International Bar Association did publish a report on the number of junior lawyers leaving the legal profession, and that revealed that around 3,000 young lawyers under the age of 14 are either leaving or considering leaving their current job within the next 5 years. So out of that survey, the figures were that 54% of respondents reported somewhat likely or highly likely to move to a new workplace, 33% want to switch to a different practice area, and 20% are thinking about leaving entirely. And the reasons for leaving were to do with the lack of work-life balance, particularly for female lawyers, mental health issues, barriers to career progression, toxic workplace culture, and low salary. Do you agree with those findings? And does LawCare hear from lawyers with similar issues?
Well, I suppose the short answers are yes and yes, but expanding a little, it's an absolutely excellent study and the data is remarkable and quite shocking. 60% of young lawyers expressing concern about work-life balance, 43%, so almost half of female respondents had concerns about lack of action within legal workplaces to address toxic workplace culture. Only 10% of respondents said they hadn't experienced any barriers to progression. So very stark statistics. And what we now have is a growing body of international evidence demonstrating the challenges of law. So it's not just a UK or a European problem. We actually included a session in LawCare's Building a Better Life in the Law conference last year, and we called it Reversing the Great Resignation. And we discussed this very issue with representatives from junior lawyer groups. And earlier this week, LawCare released its 2022 impact report, kind of showcasing the work we did last year. And what we saw was that the majority of people getting in touch with us were at the beginning of their career. 60% of them were either trainees, pupils, or had less than 5 years PQE. And that's very similar to the pattern that we've seen in previous years, suggesting that the profession needs to do a much better job of supporting juniors. A third of our contacts last year were aged 30 and under. 22% of our contacts reported career concerns. And that's a huge increase from the 8% who did so in 2021. For the first time, equaling the contacts we had about stress. And we saw from those contacts that they had a range of concerns, such as the quality or experience of their training. And just as the IBA study highlighted, they had concerns about their working environment and its impact on their well-being. Some were wanting to move organizations or to a different area of practice or leave law altogether. Some alarming data also came out of LawCare's Life in the Law research study. This report was published in September 2021, and it was a cross-profession, cross-jurisdiction study exploring the impact of work culture and working practices on well-being, using three validated academic research scales to measure burnout, and that's where workers feel emotionally exhausted by or disengaged in their work, psychological safety, and that's where people feel able and safe to speak up with ideas or questions or concerns or reveal mistakes. And that, of course, goes to the core of good workplace culture. And autonomy, and that's having control over how we work, where we work, when and with whom we work. And what we saw from that data was that 69% had experienced mental health issues in the previous year, but only half of them had felt able to discuss this at work. And we asked in our open text boxes why that was. And what we saw people disclosing was that they had concerns around stigma and possible career impact. Those in the age bracket 26 to 35 had the highest figures for burnout and work intensity, and the lowest scores for psychological safety and autonomy. It was actually the first time burnout had been measured in the UK legal community, and we saw an average sample score of 42.2, and that indicates a high risk of burnout, well above the cutoff point of 34.8 on the scale we use, which is a recognized, validated scale, the Oldenburg Burnout Inventory. We also saw that certain groups were impacted more significantly than others, and they included junior lawyers, those with a disability, women, and those from minority ethnic groups. So perhaps what we're seeing in such high attrition rates is people evaluating what they want from life and asking themselves whether the toll their choice of career is taking on their well-being is worth it. Dealing with the salary point, it was quite nuanced in the IBA report.
Yeah.
It was the most cited factor pushing young lawyers out of their current roles, and also the biggest factor responsible for drawing young lawyers towards a new role. And what we see in our support contacts at Law Care is that contacts often correlate salary with how they are valued. As you might expect, we hear from a wide range of practitioners, from those being extremely well paid, and sometimes that still isn't enough to keep them in their role, and I think this was flagged in the IBA report as well, to those who feel very underpaid and undervalued in comparison with their effort and endeavour. We know, for example, very long and unsociable hours can be expected of some practitioners, perhaps criminal practitioners, often on quite low salaries. And that has to be a concern, especially in the current economic climate. And certainly in the self-employed sector, junior barristers, especially those doing publicly funded work, can be under immense financial strain. And again, via our support channel work, financial pressures regularly crop up as an added stressor, say debt at the beginning of a career, or perhaps more experienced practitioners struggling with overheads, people with financial commitments and perhaps family or caring responsibilities, feeling tied into a career that they perhaps want to escape. So it all paints quite a bleak picture for those starting out in their career path. And it's quite a shocking waste of talent and very worrying for the long-term sustainability of the profession.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's quite worrying statistics. And I think the last sort of 4 years since COVID and the Great Resignation has really highlighted the problems within the industry. And as you said, people's sort of attitudes and motivations have changed. And I think the industry has to evolve with what the younger generation want, because they're the future of the profession. So now that we have those statistics and we understand a bit more why they're leaving, what do you think the legal profession can do to prevent junior lawyers from leaving?
Well, how long have we got, Natalie? Well, workplace culture is absolutely vital to staff retention.
Yeah.
We need to create workplaces where people feel valued, feel supported, and recognise the importance of mental health and well-being, and use that to create better support and supervision for those working within it. So manage the psychosocial risk factors. In essence, I think we need to take an honest look at the culture and working practices in law and ask ourselves, why are these talented, enthusiastic people are leaving? They're leaving a prestigious profession that many might have aspired to since being children. What is it that they're finding so intolerable? We need to create more agile, flexible, diverse, inclusive workplaces where people are less likely to feel that imposter syndrome that resonates with so many of us. Too often, the focus has been on blaming individuals, or they're just not cut out for it, putting all the onus on the individual to be more robust, to be more resilient, rather than undertaking an honest appraisal of the working environment. So the responsibility needs to shift to acknowledge that workplace factors need to be improved. As I mentioned earlier, over a fifth of our support contacts in 2022 expressed career concerns as the primary cause for contacting us. The same number were contacting us about stress, And then we had about 12% suffering from anxiety and 8% reporting suffering from depression. So the profession, employers and businesses need to acknowledge the extent to which workplaces may be contributing to these statistics. The sector has to work to improve the data from the IBA research, and which we saw from our Life in the Law study, in a genuine way, not just a box ticking manner. So making the environment one where people feel psychologically safe to speak up with questions or concerns or admit mistakes. Respect reasonable boundaries around work-life balance to drive down those burnout statistics so that lawyers don't always feel the need to be constantly on checking emails and the like. We need to provide effective supervision for staff, monitor those workloads, not turn a blind eye to people working long hours and being under huge pressure. Again, we saw from our Life in the Law data that high work intensity was associated with higher levels of burnout, no matter how psychologically safe the environment was considered to be or how much autonomy a person had. If we stop to compare lawyers' working hours with something like the aviation industry, pilots are prevented from flying more than a certain number of hours. Contrast that with some lawyers routinely working 15 hours a day, doing all-nighters sometimes. Their safety has to be compromised. And from a business perspective, from a risk management perspective, it makes absolutely no sense. But it requires commitment from seniors championing this. Just because it was like that in their early career doesn't mean it's appropriate now, doesn't mean it should be inflicted on juniors now. People who take their lunch break and annual leave, who don't send emails at 5 o'clock on a Friday asking for work to be returned by 8 o'clock on Monday morning, knowing it's going to overshadow someone's entire weekend. There's also merit in looking at a more flexible business model. Billable hours and targets create tremendous strain. We hear that through our support contacts on a day-to-day basis. And they also feed that competitive-driven element that many have in the profession. I thought there was one comment from a male UK solicitor in the IBA research, which you mentioned at the outset, which summed it up. Expecting an associate to bill over 2,000 hours and also regularly attend networking events to build profile and reach new clients is unrealistic. And when you stop to examine the metrics we use in this sector to reward success, they're very much in that vein too. The most prolific fee earner, prepared to work ridiculous hours, cancel holidays, miss out on any meaningful social life and downtime, they're the people who are promoted. It's just not inclusive. Not everyone is able to do that. There are those people who perhaps have caring or other responsibilities and can't work such excessive hours. And they must feel disillusioned when passed over for promotion. So much more flexibility in working arrangements is undoubtedly needed. I think I've got the figure correct when I say that 54% of IBA respondents felt that flexible working arrangements were the key to the long-term continuity of the profession. Actually, in our Life in the Law study, when we asked about workplace measures in place and the extent to which participants felt they were helpful, the most valued workplace measure was actually regular catch-ups. Being listened to makes people feel valued. Business models need to be designed with built-in time and resource for this. Managers getting to know their team on a personal level and building those relationships means people are much more likely to feel able to share concerns or admit to mistakes at an early stage, which has to be better for managers, those being managed, and the businesses. Of course, mental health isn't static. We all move up and down a continuum depending on what's happening in our lives. People can be dealing with all kinds of issues in their personal lives that can affect them at work. And if they're in a space where they don't feel able to be open, that can create huge additional pressure. People are the greatest asset of any business, and we need to recognize and look after our people. The industry is often so focused on the output and delivery for clients, we overlook the value of people being trained and acquiring skills in looking after that asset, looking after the well-being of those working for them. Obviously, at Lawcare, we have a strong belief in the moral case, but supporting the mental well-being of people in the industry also makes sound business sense. Deloitte's 2022 Refreshing the Case for Investment report calculated an average return of over £5 for every £1 invested in workplace mental health. Effective training for managers in both management skills and mental health awareness is necessary too. Our data from Life and the Law indicated that less than half of those working in a managerial or supervisory capacity had had any training, which is absolutely unfair on everyone involved. I think we all recognise that good lawyers don't always make good managers, certainly without any effective training. And I saw from the World Health Organization 2022 report, which published detailed guidelines on mental health at work, that there was a strong recommendation for manager training in mental health and an emphasis that commitment from senior leaders is fundamental in achieving meaningful progress. We also need to do far more to address bullying, harassment and discrimination in the workplace. Study after study discloses unacceptable levels. Over a fifth of our participants to our Life in the Law study disclosed having experienced such behaviours. And I think we all probably recognise the data that came from the IBA's 2018 report looking into these behaviours, revealing from a sample of over 7,000 lawyers worldwide that bullying, harassment and discrimination was rife, with these kind of things disproportionately affecting younger members of the profession. There's also a place for peer support and mentoring, allowing colleagues to support one another outside the more formal line management structure, and being bold enough and brave enough to find out more about what the workplace wants in things like 360-degree surveys, exit interviews, when people may feel able to be far more honest, things like anonymized staff surveys, and perhaps innovative schemes such as reverse mentoring. And actually, Lawcare will be launching a reverse mentoring pilot in the springtime, certainly later this year, and we'll provide resources to share with the profession at that point. So all of these types of measures are the collateral for a more psychologically safe working environment and a more contented and productive workforce.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are so many things that we could do to improve workplace culture and make people feel more valued. And you also touched a little bit on bullying and harassment, which brings me into the next question, which is the SRA's proposals to change its rules, requiring firms to challenge employees who mistreat their colleagues. And the SRA has also said that the proposals were linked to surveys conducted by the Junior Lawyers Division and Lawcare, so it deals with some of the workplace issues in the legal industry. What do you think about these changes? And did Lawcare respond to the proposals initially?
Yes, well, as part of our strategy and our determination to improve the culture in law, we've been doing far more advocacy than ever before, including responding to LSB and SRA consultations where appropriate. We know that lawyers with poor mental well-being are more likely to make mistakes or poor ethical decisions, So addressing the factors that can lead to poor mental well-being in workplaces protects the public and maintains confidence in the legal profession. So we submitted a formal response to the SRA consultation on health and well-being in May of last year. And the full contents of our response are on our website alongside others. And we actually met with the SRA on three occasions to discuss the new proposals. So it's fair to acknowledge that they took time to engage with us. We made it abundantly clear that we didn't agree that there should be an explicit requirement for all regulated individuals to challenge behaviour that doesn't meet the new standard. We know how difficult that is in practice, particularly for junior staff to call out inappropriate behaviour in colleagues. We don't have an accepted speak-up culture in law, and it could have potentially led to those individuals who witnessed or experienced poor workplace behaviours being in breach of the rules by not calling them out. So we were pleased that was taken on board, and consequently the recommendation is for the rule change to challenge unfair treatment to only apply to managers in firms. I believe that the SRA applied for LSB approval at the end of January and that we're currently partway through the 28-day consultation process. So once approved, SRA will presumably use their more soft powers to issue guidance about how it will apply in practice. And they've indicated that they will consult stakeholders again. So we expect to be involved at that point too. So we welcome the greater focus on workplace culture, but we still feel there's insufficient data on how many firms or individuals have been sanctioned for poor workplace behaviours. And we think more data is needed so that we can understand more about the scale of this problem. As I said earlier, we know from the work that we do at Lawcare that it's difficult, and perhaps all listeners know how difficult it is for legal professionals to challenge poor workplace behaviours because of their concern for negative repercussions. So many don't report such behaviours to their employers. And most of this conduct goes absolutely unreported to regulatory bodies. Those who have experienced unfair treatment at work are vulnerable, often experiencing stress and anxiety, and they're overwhelmed by the prospect of having to go through a formal process, be that at work or through their regulator, to call that behaviour out. At Lawcare, we'd love to see a much more formal, funded system to support people who are contemplating reporting conduct of this nature. Another difficulty that we flagged with any obligation that centres on behaviours is that inevitably individuals have varying views about whether certain behaviours are acceptable or not. What we suggested was that there needs to be a campaign across the profession to encourage challenging unacceptable behaviours in the workplace, and training and education provided to employers to enable this. We agreed that there should be an explicit requirement for firm managers or the management of other workplaces, such as in-house teams, to report conduct of this kind to the regulator. But the needs of the person who's been treated unfairly and the person who has been accused of it, they both need to be considered very sensitively, and both need to be supported emotionally and legally during any ensuing investigation. We also anticipate that there'll be some difficulty over the interpretation of the language and how challenge may be interpreted, presumably in different ways. We're dealing with lawyers after all. It's unclear exactly what actions will be expected of individuals in order to satisfy their obligation to challenge. So hopefully additional guidance will be issued around this. So we wanted more, but as I said, we had meetings with the SRA both before and after our submission, and it was clear that our views, informed by our contacts with the profession, had been closely considered. And that has to be a positive, a willingness to engage and find a better way forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think the positives that have come out of this is that we're talking a lot more about well-being and workplace culture, which when I first started wasn't anything, you know, that anybody ever talked about. You just sort of accepted the way that it was. And as a junior myself, I can understand how difficult it would be to speak out if you felt there was something not quite right, or, you know, your colleague had acted in a, maybe behaved in a way that isn't acceptable, and you feel that it will actually prevent you from progressing in your career. So I think that's quite an important thing to understand about how junior lawyers feel about reporting such instances. So it's great that the SRA have responded to your concerns with the rules that they're proposing. But I think it's great that we're finally seeing some change happen. But it's been so great to talk to you today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Trish, and sharing all that information, the good work that LawCare has been doing to support junior lawyers like myself. That brings us to the end of this episode. We will put LawCare's information in the episode's description, and don't forget to leave a rating and a review if you enjoyed this episode.